It is Tuesday, March the 22nd, 2016. Welcome to episode 123, Kid, of the GRP, the Gerwick Report podcast, the podcast that tells it like it is. Definitely check out www.gerweck for all your pro wrestling news. We got a big podcast, but quickly, let me tag in my longtime tag team partner, Frank D.
What's going on, Steve?
We got a big show today.
We sure do, but before we get to that, check out youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. Today, that's the official YouTube channel of Gerwick.net. We got tons of interview content up there. Y'all know the deal, so check it out. youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. And you mentioned 123, Kid. That's a perfect segue for our guest today because he is a former WCW Cruiserweight Champion. He is a former WWF Light Heavyweight Champion, former WWF Tag Team Champion. He is only one of two guys that were both a part of the NWO and D-Generation X. He's had runs in any organization around the world, well-known, obviously a future WWE Hall of Famer, the one, the only, Sean X-Pac, 123 Kid, Six-Pac Waltman. Welcome to the GRP.
Thanks, Chris. You know what that just reminded me of?
What's that?
In Rocky IV, when Apollo Creed was fighting Drago, and the ring announcer was announcing him, and he's like, the Kingdom Sting, you know, the Count of Monte Cristo, and he's like, how many nicknames do you have?
You got a bunch.
Yeah, you are the king of nicknames, I'm pretty sure. Why don't you update everybody how you're doing physically? I know you recently relocated to Philadelphia, doing a lot of indie shows there, and just how are you doing overall?
Overall, I'm doing very well. Everybody's always dealing with something, so I just prefer to focus on my positive stuff, you know? I just, you know, my body's a little bit beat up right now, but I'm still going out there, and you know, the fans are I'm still doing my thing every week, and you know, it's living here in Philly. I'm not a big fan of the airports and airplanes, so, you know, being here, it's very centrally located, and I can drive to a lot of my shows, like a ton of them, and that's really, it's like being in the old Florida territory. You're home almost every night, unless you went to, like, you know, the Bahamas or something. Even then, like, they just flew back. And there's a lot to be said for being in your own bed at night, you know?
Absolutely. So you're getting a lot of bookings up in Philly these days.
A lot of bookings everywhere. I mean, businesses. Maybe I should just speak for myself, but, like, when I hear people say wrestling's dead, whatever, that's bullshit. It's not dead. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, you might not like what's going on in WWE right now or TNA or whatever, but some people do. Obviously not as many. There's something for everybody, man. If you don't like that, guess what? There's something for you somewhere in wrestling these days. Come on, man. You got to admit it. If you're a wrestling fan, New Japan or something. So there's a lot of guys making a living in wrestling. That this misnomer that that's not the case isn't true. Yeah, there's not, you know, it's not maybe huge, you know, they're not making millions, but I promise you, they're making a comfortable living more than they would working a 9-to-5, most, a lot of them.
How close do you pay attention? Now, obviously, you know, you work independently, so you're going to run into people say, oh, Sean, you know, we saw Raw last night, or we've been watching SmackDown. What do you think of this storyline? How closely do you pay attention to Raw and SmackDown? Do you watch them on a weekly basis? Do you watch TNA? Do you watch Ring of Honor?
It's difficult to watch 3 hours of anything for me, man.
Amen.
Just,
for,
you know.
For us too.
So, like, it'll be one of those things. And AAA was like that in Mexico on Sundays. They had a three-hour show on Sundays on Galavision. And you kind of would tune in and out, like, you know, when your match that you wanted to see was coming on, you'd maybe tune back in for it or something. So, well, probably a little harder to do that on Raw. I don't know. I just, man, there's a lot out there. I don't just sit and all day watch wrestling, I swear. What I do is I read about it, and then when something's got a buzz, then I watch it. Time is a very precious commodity, and just to sit back and just watch 24/7 of anything. You know, to me, where I am in my life right now is kind of crazy. So I still love it all, you know, like, and I'm more well aware of everything that's going on. Trust me.
Okay, so when you do get a chance to, you know, sit down and watch Raw, SmackDown, whatever it is, what's your honest opinion of the product? And you just said it up front. Maybe it's not as popular as it once was. What do you attribute that to?
It's different. Yeah, it's different, too, man. Like, and another thing is this. When these monster ratings were going on, there weren't nearly as many networks and cable channels at choose from. And I know that wouldn't make a difference if the product was super hot, or, you know, I mean, but I mean, things are a little different these days when it comes to, you know, judging popularity or something. There's a lot more that goes into it, though.
I think you just nailed it right there, Sean. Raw on a week-to-week basis is just not must-see TV. I mean, you could miss a number of episodes and get caught up with no time what you missed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's been some good ones, but last night wasn't one of them.
And no, when you were there live, right?
I was there live, yes.
Not a good crowd.
It wasn't the crowd. You know what? And Paul even said that, because I was sitting next to Paul in the gorilla position. And I said, crowd's pretty stingy with the reactions tonight. And he said, I don't think they're really giving them much to react to be honest with you, kid. And I was like, well, I kind of didn't want to say that, but... You know, sometimes they try for something, you know, you think it's going to be good and, you know, you don't, it ends up not, you know, you don't get that double or triple. You might end up on base, but, you know, nothing spectacular.
Yeah, I saw last night on the show, and I was very surprised by the lack of reaction for, say, people like the New Day, who are... you know, undoubtedly the hottest act in WWE, and they barely got any reaction from the crowd. And I'm kind of wondering if it was a mistake for WWE to have turned them babyface.
Did they actually turn them babyface?
I believe I believe that the beatdown that they did the Monday before when the League of Nations attacked them, I believe that was to solidify them as being babyfaces.
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah, so... I believe that was it.
DX didn't turn babyface. You don't fuck on whatever. God, that's so. You know, that's the kind of shit that pisses me off when I hear that. It's like, come on.
Yeah, I'm not.
You don't turn up like you don't turn them like now. Now you're telling the people, okay, now it's okay to like him. Oh yeah, well now, okay. In that case, we don't want to fucking like him anymore because we don't want you telling us what to do.
Exactly, and I think it hurt them. I really do. They were getting these reactions as I was telling Steve before we started the show. I'm like, you know, I think they made a mistake with the New Day because people like to cheer them, but they still wanted them to be heels. And it's the same act, but it's not the same anymore because now, like you just said, now he's like, oh, you guys have to cheer them now. Well, people don't want to cheer them now. It's like back to square one to me. That's what I saw last night.
Oh man. Like I said, I haven't been watching as closely as I probably should be, you know. But honestly, man, I pretty much try to tell it like it is. So, like, I mean, sometimes I get heat, sometimes I don't. The thing is, I don't know when I'm getting heat or not because nobody will ever tell me. I was just saying that because, you know, I was about ready to say something that was, like, negative towards what's going on around, you know, the company. And I'm sure, like... somebody's listening and it's going, what is it, you know?
Right.
But come on, man, just do. I just don't get what's so hard about it. Well, actually, I do, man. I do get it because I talk to Road Dogg a lot and he's got a lot. He's doing great around there. Like, he's doing some really good work around there right now. And, you know, so I do hear, you know, the other, like, it is, like, a lot of people don't understand how difficult it is to try to get something done around there when it's, like, turned into this big bureaucracy. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever used that word to describe it or not, but, you know, you got a whole writing team, and, you know, like, I think a lot of shit is compartmentalized where, like, I don't know, and did you guys hear the AJ promo in the ring? when he got on the mic in the ring.
And the people didn't even react to his name. I was like,
yeah, oh, but man. It was like, if that wasn't a perfect, poor AJ, I felt so bad for him.
Yeah, me too.
It was just like, you could tell he was reading other people's written lines. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I'm watching that and I'm just cringing going, oh, man. And they write this shit. And then they're like going, okay, and then the people react. No, you don't know the people are going to react to that shit. Like, I mean, literally, that's what they do. They're going, and then people react. And then and then you say this, and then the people. So now you're writing the people shit for the people's reactions for them, too?
Yeah, you know something,
Sean? Why don't you give the people a fucking run sheet, the script, and let so they'll know and then react?
You know, Sean, we had Teddy Long on our show yesterday, and it's funny you bring it up because I said this yesterday, that you cannot, these writers cannot script these guys correctly because they don't know these guys like that. And one of the things that happened back in the Attitude Era, when you come out there and cut a promo, like when you came back to the WWF, you came out there and you said, Hulk Hogan said, I couldn't cut the mustard. Well, you were playing off of some real life shit that happened down at WCW when they cut the promo on you on Thunder after you got, you know, after you were fired by WCW. So you played off of that. And I think that's a lot of the guys, you know, that's one of the big problems with Roman Reigns right now, is that they script him to read this dumb shit when he's not really being himself. I've seen Roman Reigns outside of WWE when he does an interview. The dude sounds cool. But you don't see that on the TV because it's not, it's just these people that think they know, like this guy here, you know, we know who you are. We don't know who you are. We script you to do this crap. And I've seen scripts from WWE where they have these pauses in the middle for the crowd reaction, all that type of stuff. It's really ridiculous. And it's a lot of reasons why a lot of guys don't get reaction. AJ Styles has been a wrestler that's been around the world. I mean, made a big name for himself in the Indies, made a big name for himself in TNA, New Japan. And for him to come out last night and the people not react and not change his name, I really felt bad for Styles. It was really like, and a lot of people are going to take this and be like, oh, well, I told you he wasn't ready for WWE. I told you he
was. Bullshit.
Yeah, but that's what people are going to say.
I mean, there's a few things like that. Like, that's just different that he's adjusting to still, like I noticed, you know, last night in his match, Owens, like, you know, if he's going to be a babyface, should show a little bit more fire when he's waiting for the guy to get up from his, like, just can't just be standing there waiting, just not doing nothing with no expression, waiting for the guy to get up so you can get to what your next move, like, so there's little things like that, man, because he's been to Japan, and, well, that shit has to do, you should do that shit everywhere, and that's important stuff, actually. It keeps the people's reactions going until the guy feeds up to the next, to whatever else you're going to do that. And when you just stand there waiting, the people, then all you're getting, and that's not what happened in this match, because I'm really nitpicking, because it was a great match overall. It really was. I mean, it was 20 minutes, something like that. I don't know, how long was it?
It was
commercial breaks.
Yeah, it did. It was long.
So, I mean, I'm just like giving example, maybe I, you know, shouldn't be, but
no, you're good to do that because you're a veteran. You have experience. You've worked on both sides. You worked as that baby face with the fire, and you've also worked heel. So you know,
it's difficult to it's you know, Kevin Owens plays a heel to teeth everywhere except for actually in the ring. You know, he needs to cheat a little bit every now and again. If you're just gonna just come back on the guy, just start, you know, yeah, of course, the people are going to like you, man, and then, like, be a babyface, Dad.
Yeah, but here's the thing with that, though. The thing with that, though, is that we read, you know, a year or two ago that Vince McMahon says pretty much that there are no more babyfaces and heels.
Oh, bullshit.
That was his word. That's what he said.
Then why did they turn New Day?
I have no idea.
Okay, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
that might have been said at the time, but trust me, there's baby bases and heels.
I would hope so.
Yeah. And it's just whoever the, I don't know, if you can, whatever. I'm for the good guy, bad guy scenario, but not purely. Like, I mean, I also don't mind there just being, as long as they care about both guys,
right,
you know, and they're making noise. I'm for that too. But ideally, man, it's good to have a guy to cheer and a guy to boo.
That's the fundamental.
For me, man. But I'm just telling you my particular outlook on things.
Well, if you go,
I don't think it's you know, it's opinions. It's
opinions. Exactly. But if you go watch a movie, you know, and you have the hero and you got the villain. Same thing with WWE. I said it yesterday. WWE is just one gigantic movie that keeps going. So you got to have those. I mean, the bottom line is this. I want to cheer the good guy, and you want to boo the bad guy. That's what you grew up on. That's what comes natural to it. You know what I mean? So when you have these characters that are kind of, you know, tweeners or whatever, and you're not knowing what side to play here, it really confuses the audience, and the audience doesn't know how to react to that. And I think that's one of the big problems with the New Day is that, yeah, the New Day got this huge beatdown, but were they really established as the babyfaces? Well, yeah, because now they're working with the League of Nations. That's the thing. But I don't think people were ready for New Day to turn. You have to turn them. I mean, they were cheering them, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that WWE is making a lot of money off of New Day merchandise. So they feel that, yo, if we turn them babyface, we're going to...
Yeah, but, okay, I mean, of course that's a huge part of it, but that's an old way of thinking. That's an outdated way of thinking.
I think
CM Punk probably sold a lot of merch. Didn't he sell shitloads of merchandise as a heel?
No, he didn't. He said in the
or did he not have a shirt or anything like that when he was a heel?
He had shirts when he was a heel, but he said that his merchandise dropped when he turned heel. He didn't want to be a heel.
You know what though? Here, all right. Probably shouldn't be saying this either, but yeah, they can make that happen like that. Like, you know, where you're placed up on the board and where they're selling the merchandise in the venues, where your merchandise is for display is placed up there, hugely affects how much merchandise is sold. So trust me, there's other factors that go into that as well that we have to think about.
Right, right.
I don't know if anybody's ever really brought that up to you, but like...
No, they haven't, but I
things
noticed
like that. Are huge.
I noticed that I went to a show the WWE did in Inglewood at the Forum in Inglewood, California, and the New Day's merchandise was like right up there with John Cena's, and everybody was buying their stuff, but they weren't even on the show.
Yep.
So,
but I get it. You know, I get it why they're doing it. I just disagree with it wholeheartedly, that's all.
Right.
But I'm not there. You know, not often, you know, not on a weekly basis. So, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and bitch about things. I mean, and because I do know what it's like the hassle it is to try to get shit done, you know, to try to have a vision and then try to make it actually turn out just something even similar to the vision you had in your head. And it's just really, man, is it hard. Especially when you have all these people, you know, all these different egos and personalities and everybody wanting to change something a little bit, and, you know, and only natural because it's your shit. Like if you're in it, like you want to tweak it to so you can make it at least partly yours, you know, like just like promos and that when they're scripting promos, I would have to make it my own. I would have to. I could not read their whatever they just gave to me. I could say, okay, you want me to make this point. Okay, I'll make it, but I ain't saying this. Not that I was a great promo guy or anything. I can do it now, but when I was like running full time, I don't know. I always let the other guys do it, you know?
I think you were pretty good on the mic. I think you don't give yourself enough credit, really.
I was a little rough. I kept it real, though.
Yeah.
That's why I think it worked.
Yeah, you kept it real. I remember one time you guys were on Nitro and you cut a promo and you guys were out there talking about the potholes, talking about Flair and Piper and all that.
Yeah.
And you said, you see Banana Nose Flair running around here. And I was like, that's funny as shit.
You know, I stole that from Terry Funk, who I saw last night. God bless him.
Yeah, Terry Funk was on the show last night. He did a cameo with Dean Ambrose and people.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. It was great to see him.
Yeah, definitely.
I just remember one time when Flair won the belt from Steamboat in Nashville, and Terry was one of the judges at ringside.
Yep.
And then he got and congratulated Rick, and then beat the shit out of him, gave him that pile driver. I think it was on the table, maybe.
Yep. The table didn't break.
And right, but that was great. But anyways, he said, and you know, like in the old Tech Quick Drive studio when they were doing TVs there on two Saturdays. You know, he'd come, cut a promo, and he said that Banana Nose, Phyllis Diller and Drag, that sucking dog, Ric Flair, and I always remembered it.
Yeah.
So I got a footnote technically on that. Horse teeth, too.
What'd you think of the return of Shane McMahon, and I guess just overall the build-up to this year's WrestleMania, how it's going so far?
I like it. I wish he would have been there last night, but I love it. I mean, it's just very coincidentally, like probably a month before he showed back up, I was like just commenting like just about how great he actually was, like a lot, like online on Twitter and that, and, you know, just saying how there really is no one that has ever had their very first match like and done such a good job. And somebody brought up LT, and that was a good point. He did a hell of a job too. But, you know, Shane was just, and he was a little bit funny to move around in the ring, and because like, he was seen so wound up. But like he was great, man. I had his first match with him, and it was at WrestleMania here in Philly, in the building where they had Raw last night. And it was one of the better matches on the show. And it was his first match. Because he had heat. I was pissed off. I didn't want to wrestle Shane McMahon. I wanted to wrestle a wrestler at WrestleMania. That was my brain, you know, how my brain worked. I didn't get it that at the time that, hey, the boss is asking me to take care of his son and have he's trusting me with that, you know? And the fact that being in that meant that we were getting shitloads of TV time, and it was getting a lot of steam. That angle had a lot. It was hot. It was great for me. And the deal was, I said, okay, Vince, but I'm not putting him over, and he's got to listen to everything I say. And then I ended up putting him over.
Yeah, I remember that match.
That was on me though, because
yeah.
I knew Hunter was turning. Hunter was telling me he was turning, and I was thinking really hard about it. You know, like, you know, he was in this match with Kane, and you know, I knew I wasn't going to do a job for Shane, but you know, I just kept thinking, man, if he turns, man, like, what's the best way for him to turn? You know, there's no better way for him to turn than to fuck me. And so I just decided, like, you know, I got rewarded for it too. You know, it didn't hurt. It didn't do one bit of harm to me. It helped me there. It gave me a ton of sympathy. It was better than if I would have beat him.
I've always heard, and you probably can debunk this rumor right now, but I've always heard that you guys necessarily weren't cool with that. Weren't cool with DX, you know, Triple H, basically Triple H in China being removed from DX and basically turning with the corporation. I've seen it.
We wanted to stay together, you know, but I was fine with whatever, man.
Yeah.
Well, not whatever, but like, I was perfectly confident enough that I would be fine on my own. And you know, I did the stuff with Kane, and that shit was great. That was some of the best stuff I ever did, in my opinion. Right. He was my favorite partner.
Yeah, it was very entertaining stuff.
What is your current relationship with WWE? Obviously, you were at Raw last night. You have a Legends deal. I'm sure you're probably getting royalties for past matches. What's your overall relationship with Vince and the company right now?
Oh, it's good. It's great. Everything's great. I was there last night. I was, you know, saw everybody. Spent a lot of time with everybody, and I'm looking forward to WrestleMania. I'll be in Dallas. I'll be at Fan Access. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not like I'm going to be on the phone every, you know, like all the time. Like, oh yeah, I just talked to Vince yesterday, and blah blah. You know, nobody does that no more. It's text these days, you know.
Right.
If somebody says they talked to so-and-so, no, they didn't. They texted them.
That's how
much.
It works these days. Yeah.
Well,
right.
I mean, I see the pros and the cons. The con is, like, it's just removing us from social interaction, which is really unhealthy. But, there's still that. But just the human part, like, at least a voice, man. You know? If you can't be face-to-face, at least a voice. But at the same time, you can sure get a lot more communication done and a lot more efficiently.
You know, the worst part is when you're in a restaurant and you see two or three people sitting next to each other and they're texting. They're not even having a conversation.
That's not worse than being at a meet and greet and paying X amount of dollars to meet somebody, standing in fucking line for half an hour, getting up there and they got headphones on, listening to music, and they're looking at their smartphone. That's the kind of shit that I'm like, come on, guys. I know some guys are like, just at me when, because I know some guys that are like that, but they need to stop. Seriously, man. I'm not like usually the guy that, well, yeah, I do preach a lot. I get on my soapbox a lot, but, you know, come on, man. So just don't do it.
What'd you make of Hulk Hogan winning his lawsuit against
Gawker? I was extremely happy for him. He got fucked so bad, but, like, no pun intended at all. I mean, that ruined his life. Trust me, there's anybody that can look in the mirror and say, I've never said shit that bad in my entire life, most of them, I'm going to say they're lying. That his shit got put out there. Not everybody. There's some, like, I can't remember ever saying anything that harsh, but, you know, we've all, like, I'm not going to speak for y'all, but, you know, shit gets said that, man, you would hope some of the shit. I come on. Tell me, you guys. Both of you. Have you ever, thinking back, have you ever said some really fucked up shit?
Absolutely.
That is, man, and it's the problem is, man, it's hard to unhear it, you know? And it hurt, man. It hurt me. Because I love Hulk, and it hurt to hear that, you know?
Right.
So I'm happy for him. And I know all those people involved in all that shit. And that's a piece of fucking shit thing to do to tape somebody like that. And even asked him, you're not taping this shit, are you? Something fucking Bubba's ass should have been fucking sued too.
Yeah, he, you know,
should be thrown in fucking jail for that shit.
Yeah, he always was always a snake. The stuff that he would do to, like, Honky Tonk Man. Yeah. So
I know those kids all real well. I'm real disappointed in a lot of people over that situation.
I was going to ask you, too, you went back to WWE last year at WrestleMania during the match between Triple H and Sting. You guys came out as DX, and you took on the NWO. And I was trying to think to myself when I saw that, like, damn, X-Pac, you know, whose side are you on? You were a part of both of those groups. So, what was the experience like when you guys were out there taking on the NWO?
I didn't know we were even going to do it. As far as I was told I wasn't doing anything like for fan access or anything, right? Well, no, originally, when I called about the WrestleMania plans, like, did that hurt anything? Like, they said, we don't have any, they don't have anything for it. So I thought they were bringing me, and I got fucking pissed. I blew a gasket, you know, and I'm like, I could have, and Hunter's like, calm down. See, that's the thing, is a lot of people, they ask me, how come you're not, you know, don't have, how come you're not working creative or doing something like that? Because it's shit like this. I go, I blow a gasket on shit. And I'm sure they probably don't want to hear it all the time. And they would. They would. Because everything that sucks, I'd be like, oh, this fucking sucks. You know, I would. They know it. I know it.
Is that one of the problems?
I'd be good at it. I'd be good at it. But it wouldn't, it just... I always take my way. My idea is the best. I've always been that way.
Do you think that's one of the problems, though, at WWE right now, is that a lot of people aren't saying, hey, you know what, this idea really sucks?
Yeah, nobody wants to say it.
Yeah.
Except, like, Sean, when he comes and they give him something, I mean, he just says it automatically. Even if it doesn't, just to fuck with him. But... I would never suggest, like, I've already given this advice, like, to guys, like, you know what, if you're really good and you're bringing something to the table, you might think you can't rock the boat, but trust me, you can rock the fuck out of that thing if you gotta know when to beat the gun in the holster, too, but if something sucks, you're the one out there doing it, not those motherfuckers that wrote it, so... It's like being in a shitty movie, you know? You could be a hell of an actor, but if the script sucks, and, you know, everything else, Oh, that's brutal, man. Awful.
I know you're politically active. I actually saw your interview on Infowars.com. You were handicapping the latest presidential debate. How do you see this thing unveiling, and do you think Donald Trump is actually going to win this election?
I think it's very, very possible. I would like to, wow, it's a real polarizing issue, you know, but I pretty much get my characters. Yeah.
Sure.
The thing is some of the shit about Trump, it really bothers me. It does a lot of people. But the whole authenticity, hey, fuck it. You know, it is refreshing to me just to sit back. Because both sides, Dems, Republicans, they're all fucking full of shit. They're all just as big hypocrites in my book. And it's really just reflecting in Bernie, man. I love that guy. I totally disagree with him on fiscal issues. Like, I don't see how the fuck he thinks they're going to pay for some of the stuff. But, man, it would sure be nice.
Well, the thing is, people call him a socialist.
They're real. These two guys are real. They're on the opposite end of the spectrum of realness.
The sad thing is,
Sean, they share a lot of things in common too, man. There's a lot of people that are saying that they would either pick Bernie or Trump. There's a lot of people that are saying that, and that's crazy. Like, because you know, for so long, everybody's just like fallen on party line. And man, I would really love it for party lines to get fucking erased, you know. That would be awesome for me. It's never gonna happen. It's just a fantasy. But I mean, oh, politics is so fucked, man.
Well, the thing is, with Bernie is his supporters. You tell them that, you know, Bernie Sanders is a socialist. Don't even know what a socialist is. They don't care. They're gonna get free stuff, right? Free education and free health care and all this other stuff is like. What do you think that money comes from?
Well, I mean, it comes from, you know, a lot of taxes and regulations.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you know, that's where, like, I have some issues, you know, like, because I don't think the government spends our fucking money very well at all, you know? I mean, in a perfect world, that would be great. You know, ideally, like, that does, man, that sounds like utopia, man, but human nature dictates that shit doesn't really work like 100%. But I don't believe any particular ideology has it all right. I'm a libertarian, and I don't even think libertarian is 100. Like, I think there's some things that, you know, I don't mind a little splash of, like, because we got Social Security here. Say what you want about it, but there's a lot of people that's what they live on, right, when they're older. And I don't really know a whole lot of people that, you know, and Medicaid and that. So, I mean, we have socialism already here.
True.
It's not my bag. I would love to do it a different way, but it's not going to kill us. Like, I don't, whoever becomes president, I think our country's going to be okay. Or we're going to be fucked. Like, I don't think it's going to be because of who the president is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think the latter, but I think we're already there,
oh,
Sean.
Like, you know, I mean, look at the events of today, you know, in Brussels, Belgium, just terrible, you know, but that was, you know, just another excuse to let's go to war. Come on, let's go.
What would you think of Jesse Ventura entering the race as a libertarian?
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Do you think he'll do it?
He's not really like, he's kind of a Dennis Kucinich libertarian, like a left-leaning, a little bit left-leaning libertarian.
Right.
I'm a fan of Dennis Kucinich, man. I really like them. And I like Rand Paul and Ron Paul, you know, and I like Gary Johnson. But, you know, Jesse, I think people dig him. Now, if he got in the race, oh, they try to bury him over the conspiracy thing, conspiracy theories, and try to make him out to be a wacko nut and all that. You know, and he's not. He's really not. He's incredibly intelligent, and he was a really good governor who had to deal with both sides of the state legislature obstructing every single thing he tried to do.
You know, the problem I would see, Sean, say if he got in the election and he would win, would he be lame duck? Because who's his allies? He can't work with the R's and he can't work with the D's because they're all against him, right? So it'd be like gridlock.
Well, then, you know what? But still, that would be a problem. But the American people would see, I mean, the Congress is already at an all-time low approval rate.
Yep.
These people, I mean, like, there's going to be some house cleaning. I think it's coming. And it needs to, man. I'm a term limits guy. I think we need term. I don't know if we'll ever get them, but I think we need them.
I doubt it. They have to vote it on themselves. They're not going to give themselves term limits.
Exactly.
So that'll,
exactly.
That's
it's too bad they couldn't do it like states do, where the people can vote on a constitutional amendment, like they've done with the marijuana laws in Colorado and Washington and that and here in D.C. But they're like in the gray area over it. But you know, the people had to, because Congress wouldn't get off their ass. You know, so they had to do it on their own.
Well, why should these guys make
$150,000?
Yeah, why should these guys make $150,000 when we people can't afford to pay their own bills, their own taxes?
Yeah.
And they work 6 months a year and make $150,000 and have pensions when they get out of office. This is ridiculous. But nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not. It's not, it's going to change. It's going to change like revolution style. So preferably like nonviolent, please God. But I mean, when you see some of the stuff that we're seeing on TV right now, it reminds me of like when I was watching footage of the stuff that was going on in the Middle East and the Arab Spring or things like that, you know? People all fight each other and, you know, like the stuff in Chicago, the Trump rally. That's
yep.
Crazy.
Let me ask this question, Sean. What was the circumstances behind you leaving the WWF in 1996?
I was actually the first one that was talking to WCW. It was before Kevin or before Scott or Kev. It was the same time. I was the one that actually, it wasn't a call from Dallas. It was me being out. I mean, they have this story like that they're floating like on the, things like the Click DVD and stuff. But the real story is this. I was hurt and I was out rehabbing my injury and training this martial arts guy named Francois. He also worked for WWE later on. But anyways, I was staying with the guy that was with Golden Gem Enterprises, and I was going there all the time. And I wanted to go meet Barry Bloom, the agent that was Jesse Ventura's agent, because I wanted to get some movie stuff, you know, try to do some movies or something. And while I was there, you know, he mentioned something about Eric, you know, throwing a lot of money around. Anyway, you know, I told Scott, or I gave him Scott's number. I gave him Scott's number, and, you know, he called Scott in the office while I was sitting there, and that's how that whole thing got started. And then, but my contract rolled over. I didn't know it rolled over, so, like, I was stuck there. And those guys signed, and I was staying there, and then, like, I got all messed up at a TV after we got back from the song Europe tour. And I ended up going to rehab. And when I got out of rehab, Vince was awesome. He was, you know, people say shit about Vince. He paid me better while I was in rehab than he did while I was working full-time every day, you know? And then when I got out and Scott and Kevin were already gone, he flew me to Stanford, and he said, look, he kind of told me that I'd be in the same boat as Hunter, you know, because Hunter was in the doghouse over the curtain call incident. And, you know, but if I wanted to go work for WCW, that he would, you know, he would give me a week to think about it. So that was a really tough decision. It was a really, really tough decision. But, like, I knew I had to do that because Vince only looked at me in a certain light, you know, like I wasn't really going to get those main events like I got when I came back. So I kind of knew, like, I had to go. The money was going to be, like, guaranteed, and I really wasn't making a lot of money, you guys. I mean, it was really tough. It was really tough. So luckily, WCW thought I made way more money than I really did. So I ended up getting a $250,000 guarantee from them. And so I ended up calling Vince, or calling JJ, because I don't think I had the balls to tell Vince personally after everything he had done, you know, like getting me healthy and everything. So that's pretty much how that happened. And then they jerked their feet on giving me my release just to screw with WCW. That's why I wasn't the sixth guy, because my release didn't come through.
Hmm.
Well, it did, but WCW's legal didn't like the wording of it. They were saying that it left. Anyways, that was the best thing. That was the best they were gonna get. So they finally just said, okay, whatever. And I grew a beard. I grew a goatee and changed my looks. I didn't want to be a kid anymore anyways. I was always so worried about being an adult. From the time I was 5 years old, I was running around thinking I was a grown-up.
Right.
So,
And what was the atmosphere like when you first got to WCW?
I don't know, man, because I was just happy to be there with my boys. Conan and Ray and, you know, the Mexican guys were there, and they were cool as shit. And, you know, I knew some of the other guys, too. And I guess I was oblivious to what it was like other than what it was like for me, you know? Because I was happy. I guess maybe I assumed everybody else was. I'm not sure. I don't know. It was great for me. It was really good. It was easy. It was like taking care. I was telling Chris Jericho this. I was like, because he was asking me, you know, what it was like going from WWF to WCW. And I was like, it was more like I told him GWF was more organized. The WCW was so unorganized, you guys. I'm sure you probably heard this, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And when I was in Global at the Sportatorium, like, mind you, hey, we were doing 5 hours of TV a week back then. A lot of people don't realize that about GWF. We put out a ton of TV, if you think about it. Every single day there was a fresh TV, fresh episode on ESPN. So it wasn't like, okay, oh yeah, well they didn't do that much in Global, so it was easy. No, they were pretty organized. Say what you want about the product, but it was organized. And there was chaos in WCW. And I was telling Jericho this yesterday. I think the main reason that everything came together was strictly because there was such good talent involved. Right? Because as far as like everything else, and the direction, like, I thought the direction was good. Like, I really liked Sullivan's booking style. But, like, you know, too many guys had their own creative control and all that. And so, like, it really made it really chaotic, you know. We'd be rewriting TV 30 minutes before we went on air. It was just crazy. And I wasn't used to that. But it was fine. I thrived in it. Because all you got to do is just point you, you know, which way's to the ring. So, and guys on there, like, I mean, we worked full time. We really worked full time. WWF, and every night was like a different experiment. You know, we were like scientists, and every night was a different experiment in a different lab. And that's our style is like a science to us. You know, our psychology, our way of doing things. So it was just so easy when we got down there. So easy.
Hey, what's up, players? Teddy Long. Hey, for all your pro wrestling news, all you've got to do is go to Gehrig.net. That's right. For all your pro wrestling news, go to Gehrig.net. And they have been number one since 1997. Now, that's a long time, players. That means it's a lot of credibility. Holla.
Check out YouTube.com/Gehrig Report Podcast today. Subscribe to our channel. Like our videos. Leave your comments. We definitely appreciate your support.
Hey everyone, this is Stevie Richards from DDP Yoga, and you're listening to GRP and Gerwick Report Podcast with Steve Gerwick and Frank D.
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
After enjoying this edition of the GRP, the Gerwick Report Podcast, definitely head over to www.gerweck.net for other great wrestling podcasts, such as The Rack Show with Lindsay Ward and Sir Rockin', Pro Wrestling Nation with Sam Medina. Check out Breaking Raw with Atlee Green as they cover every edition of Monday Night Raw. And then you can also join Atlee Green and my main man, my tag team partner, Frank D, on the Raw Deal Podcast. All available at www.gerweck.net.
And then you had the neck injury, and you were sidelined doing a lot of that stuff in the NWO. And then you found your way back to the World Wrestling Federation. You came out the night after WrestleMania 14, and you joined D-Generation X, and you cut the promo on Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan about you not being able to cut the mustard. What was the overall experience being back, basically being back home in the WWF, and how was it this time around?
It was great. It was the best time of my life. It really was. Jericho, like Chris asked me, it was better than the NWO? And I'm like, you damn right it was. It was like 100, and I'm not trying to downplay how great the NWO experience was, because it was awesome. But it's hard to describe in words how much more awesome that the experience was when we went back and did the X. It just blew everything away.
I agree with that, because by the time you went back to the WWF and DX, the NWO had become very watered down with too many people joining the faction. And I believe, you know, you had a much better run when you came back as X-Pac. I mean, you were doing, championship matches with The Rock. You were tag team champion with Kane. You were doing a lot of good stuff in there. And then Here, as a fan, what I didn't like. I didn't like when you guys, when DX got back together and they turned you heel. Me, as a fan, when I watched that, I look back to it, I don't really think it was the best move at the time where you could have gone. I think that, once again, you kind of got saddled back in a faction and really never kind of break away from that. And I really think, looking back on it, and I've been watching a lot of this stuff lately on the network, too, it really kind of killed the reactions that you were getting, because you were one of the most over guys they had on that roster at the time.
I don't recollect that being the case as far as when we were doing the DX stuff as a heel. It was after that everything went into the went down the shitter. We were getting monster reactions in the arenas, and business was the best it ever was. And we were working with Rock, and they were booing the fuck out of us, and they were... I mean, I get what you're saying about, once again, falling back into the faction. But hey, man, that's what we were, man. We were a band, you know? I mean, I'm cool with that, you know? I'm cool with, okay, I never was the world champion. I'm just fucking fine with it. Trust me, I'm happy just being one of the members of the band. Yeah, what I wanted, I didn't give them I wouldn't let them give me the title, because I... Mind you, I wasn't the polished promo, but I would have gotten better the more I talked. The more they give you the stick, the better you get. But and the more you find yourself. But the stuff in my contract where they could only use me 15 days a month. If they're gonna be the world champ, they're gonna need you more than 15 days a month. You know, things like that. Just how difficult I was, and how can, I was talking to Steph about this last night. I'm like, geez, you guys put up with a lot of shit from me. You know, there's a lot of things people go, oh, they didn't use you. They could have used you better, you know, they should have used you better. I'm like, they would have if I would have let them. It's the truth. But I was happy to get back together. I loved doing it, man. I never wanted to break the thing up, you know, but I mean, it was better we broke it up than people than out there are welcome. So,
And then
I just think it was for me personally, is after that, and what I kind of floated around, did some stuff with like with the Jericho, because my stuff with Jericho was spread out over a while. Like I worked with them, and then I did somewhere else, and then I was back working with them again. They actually wanted me to work with him at WrestleMania, and I wanted to finish my stuff off with Kane. It was really stupid because the stuff with Kane, with me as a heel and him as a face, we had stretched that out as long as it could be stretched out. And I wanted this, I had this idea for this special match at WrestleMania. And, you know, they come to me with Jericho, and I was like, oh, I want to do it to Kane. So I can't remember who, and it would have been for the IC title. What a sweet spot at WrestleMania, right? I shot myself in the foot a million times around there. You know, I did get some heat. You know, it got, when you get heat with the head writer, Ryan Gewirtz, when you call a wrestler's cord on him and then, like, he gets just ripped to fucking shreds, you're pretty sure that he's going to stab you in the back in the writing meeting every chance you can get. And then when you cut off Michael Hayes' ponytail or his mullet, like, and he's, like, in there, too. Like, and then I got Paulie, like, I was on... probably on Paulie's bad side, because I didn't want to do Impact Players 2.0 with TJ and Lance Storm. You know, I didn't want to do a rehash of somebody else's stuff. I wanted to do my own stuff. And but I mean, I understood where Paulie was coming from, but like it was just how I got it squashed. I think that was kind of might have bothered him. I'm really close. I love Paul. Like now, like I mean, we have. I think we have an excellent relationship. He's awesome to me now. But, you know, I had a lot. If I did, once I didn't have anybody have my back in those meetings, I was fucked, you guys. I was, man.
Yeah, do you consider, you know? Do you consider...
If my performance level didn't go down, I don't think to the day I left there my performance level went down.
No, I don't think it was the performance at all. I think it was just the stuff that creatively they saddled you with. I mean, like, me personally as a fan, once again, as a fan, at the time, I did not like X-Cypher. I did not like that faction. I thought that faction, you know, it like, where, you know, when you think about X-Pac, the character, it's excitement, you know, and I didn't see that excitement anymore when I looked at X-Cypher.
Yeah, no, I get that, and... The thing is, like, we were trying to be, well, I don't know about we, but, like, I was actually, like, trying to be, like, a heel, like, you know, get people to boo me. And I guess I maybe overdid it a little too much. But, because, I mean, I thought we had good matches. The crowds were all into it, but it wasn't really going anywhere, man. And maybe that's just because I wasn't a good enough front man. Who knows? You know, I mean, I can't blame it all on the writing.
After the whole X-Factor thing happened, you kind of disappeared for a little while. The invasion angle happened. WCW went out of business. WWE brought a lot of guys in. That whole debacle happened. That's another story for another day. You came back to the WWE in 2002. You were once again aligned with the NWO. And I was a huge NWO fan growing up, still a huge fan to this day. And you came out there. It was a SmackDown episode in Canada. You came out, and Hogan was out there. He had just beat down... all in that.
Right.
You came out with the steel chair, you hit him with the steel chair, you ripped the shirt off, and people went crazy because X-Pac is back in the NWO. I, for one...
And I did that because I swear to God, I thought I looked pretty damn good because I'd been training my ass off.
Yes.
I was in short trunks, too, for the only time in my entire career.
Yes.
And I still had bird legs. But, yeah, and if you go back and look at that segment, so much went on before I finally came down and stopped Hogan. You know, they had Rock come down, and Rock got stopped, and he was laid out, you know. And when Scott and Kev re-signed, and they were coming back NWO, you know, the usual suspects in the writing team were trying to keep me from being in it, and they were trying to say, oh no, he's not right. So, are you serious? I'm not right for the part, for the NWO? Like, who else is if I'm not? You know, like, we're the Wolfpack, you dumbasses. They knew, they were just, you know, trying to bury me, and Hogan insisted on that. That was Hogan. Hogan's idea to get color for me, everything. Hit him with the chair, spray paint him. That was pretty solid.
I'll never forget that.
I look back
at that, too, and I kind of wonder, had things not went the way they did, and Hogan hadn't left the group, and you came in, and it would have been you four guys, and maybe you add in the Big Show, because you guys all, you know, all five of you would have been original NWO guys.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, things happened the way they did. But, you know, I was still very grateful because, you know, my last match there was in the main event of Raw. It wasn't like, you know, I left there in the buried at the bottom. Like, if I would have, like, been done after X Factor or whatever the hell, you know, that would have been a low note to leave on. But I left on a pretty high note, like, you know. So, and we did some really good business with that while it lasted. You know, it wasn't executed properly, obviously. You know, I don't think we need to go into that because it's been discussed ad nauseum on how they handled the NWO storyline there. But business-wise, it was incredible. Like, you know, Scott, Kevin, and I would work, like, do, like, a handicap match versus Hogan and Hunter. I mean, they're record gates, like, in Meadowlands. We were just talking about that the other night. I was really blessed. It was like I said, I was really happy to have gone out in that fashion as opposed to on the bottom. So
yeah, it was
very cool. Very cool, Hogan.
Yeah, it was a trip to see you out there. I mean, I know the match talking about it was NWO versus The Rock and Hogan on Raw. It was right before. It was like the last Raw before the brand split, and you guys went out there and you tore the house down. It was a really cool moment to see you in the ring with Hogan after all the shit that happened. You know, Hogan saying,
you know, and
mustard.
And we could have done, you know, obviously it wouldn't have been the, you know, typical Hogan heel, you know, the big mod dragon this way, but, you know, they fucking hated me. The people hated me. So, And every time I got in the ring with Hulk, people went nuts. So, I mean, we could have gotten some singles matches out of that. And, you know, I don't just slip, flop, and slide all around the place for him. It was easy working with him. Oh, my God. It was amazing. We could do anything. I mean, as long as it made sense, it worked. Because people loved him. So, everything good must come to an end.
Yeah, everything good must come to an end, but then you showed up at NWA TNA. Scott Hall was already there. You came out one night, and they introduced you as Six-Pac, and you came out there at the old Nashville TNA Asylum. And you were around there for a little while.
I was, yeah, Jerry had called me months ago. Jerry Jarrett called me before I came back into the NWO thing, because I was out and you had the idea. I'm starting that up as a weekly pay-per-view. That was the concept. And the TNA was a double entendre, like legit. It was supposed to mean total nonstop action and tits and ass. He'd even said, you know, they'd have to maybe even have the occasional beaver shot, you know, or something like that. So, I mean, originally it was supposed to be like an adult-oriented show. I mean, they had kind of like stripper cages with strippers dancing in them in the entrance. So, but that was his concept, and he was offering. He told me he was going to pay me a lot of money, and I just told him I'm getting ready to go back and do this NWO thing, Jerry. Like, I said, but you know, if something happens, I said definitely come help you out. So that's how that came about.
And Jerry,
as soon as I told Jerry that I had my release, Jerry was like, you're never going to believe this. You know, and I'm like, what? He's like, tell Sal the money backers took their money, you know, backed out of the deal. And da, 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 da. He's like, what would you possibly work for me for? And I was like, oh, whatever you can pay me, Jerry. Whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, you were down there, though, a little while.
And yeah, no, it was great, because I love Jerry, and Scott went too, and Scott did right. The same thing. He was like, you know, we just like Jerry, so.
What was your opinion, though, when they finally did find some financial backers in the Carter family?
Scott Hall and I were the ones that talked the Carters into actually buying the company.
Oh, really?
Jerry came up and asked us to talk. They came to one of the shows in Nashville. And so we just talked to him from the heart. We didn't, like, try to sell him on anything. You know, we weren't going, oh, yeah, you'll make a shitload of money or anything like that, you know, because that would have been bullshit. You know, because most people lose their ass at wrestling.
Right.
So we just told him how much that, you know, competition, you know, means in our industry and how much it would mean to, you know, to the talent more so than, oh yeah, this is a gold mine, you know? I mean, it was nothing like that. It was just, they were inspired by it, what we had to say. Maybe I heard that from Dixie's brother himself.
Right. What is your overall opinion though of Dixie Carter?
I don't think she's a bad person. I just think that she just can't relate to, like, I don't think she's ever had any roles. Her idea of hard times and like yours and mine are, I'm sure, way different. And it doesn't seem like they value, just as a company, that they value their word very much. It reminds me a lot of AAA in Mexico, to be honest with you. I don't know. I used to think she was just naive, but it's not the case.
It's very interesting.
What's your overall opinion of Vince Russo?
I don't know, man. He's a nice guy. He's nice. I think he seems a little off his rocker lately, but who hasn't been at times? Well, I mean, there's a lot of people. I sure have been, so I shouldn't be one of the best studs, I guess is what I'm trying to say. He seems to be really obsessed with, getting credit. I think he doesn't think he gets the proper credit he deserves, or it's something seems to be sour grapes and bitterness there, you know, from my perspective. But like, as a human being, man, I like him. I really do. We're totally diametrically opposed philosophically when it comes to wrestling. That's all.
What do you think the impact of the internet has had on pro wrestling? And what do you think, what would the percentage be of wrestling fans today that are smart to the business versus what it was in the past?
I don't know. I've never really tried to gauge it. It's obviously a bigger percentage than before the internet, but there's still a huge portion of the people that don't really dig that deep into it. They just want to enjoy the show. And honestly, I think that's the majority. And it's because, honestly, like, if I had to guess the reason for that, it's because most people, like, actually have other shit going on in their lives besides following wrestling. You know what I mean? So, it's people like us that we just, like, start wrestling. And there's a lot of closet fans out there. There's a lot of closet pot smokers out there. I guess it's really a maybe not the best analogy for you guys' show, but that was the point I was trying to make.
No, you know, but
so
right,
it's hard to, it's really hard to judge that. But I'm wondering how many people like that are showing up to the arenas now are the smart, because it seems like a lot of them are.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
And I was just at a birthday, like, I stopped into one of the corporate suites because somebody I know had a birthday party for their daughter there, and like, so I just had the favor, I stopped in there. And they were pretty smart. They followed it pretty hardcore. But they still didn't know the intricacies of it like we're talking.
Right.
You know, like all the, I mean, they were, I think they were about as smart as the fans in there get. And they were still not, like, you know, the hardcores.
I think it's definitely, you see that now when the fans go to the shows. I mean, it used to be they would say the smart fans were the minority. I think that's complete bullshit, because if that's the case, then why is Roman Reigns not being accepted? You know what I mean? Why is Roman Reigns not being accepted? That's the point. If it's just the smarts, then this thing would be over like crazy on that TV.
Yeah. It's all these things that we're talking about right now, man, it's really, like, just when I think I know the answer to the, you know, like, to the, you know, what's up, like, or what's, you know, I don't know, I think I'm pretty, like, hip to the business. And, you know, there's a lot of times when I go, you know what? I don't get it, but hey, the people like it, and so I'm not arguing with them. So I don't think that I have to thrust to, you know, I mean, the times are changing, and you know, when I gotta face it, man, when I'm getting older, like, I don't have my finger on the pulse as much as I think I do, you know? So it's like, I'm kind of like, I want to know the answer to that question too.
I guess that was a
10-minute answer to your question. Sorry about that.
No, don't worry about that. It really is. The business has changed a lot, and there are a lot more people, because you know what, honestly, if you want to know the insides of this business, back in the day, there was no internet. Back in the day, there was no YouTube where you can go on there and see people work matches and call spots and all that different stuff.
Right.
You have that now.
Yeah, you might, you would read, if you got the Observer or the Torch or something, you might read a description of it or a star rating.
Exactly.
Or something, you know? Yeah, totally. And then you would have to figure out, like, you'd have to find a tape trader.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to get into that deal, and I was into that. Like, I wasn't like the tape trader guy, but I got I knew somebody that was, so I got to watch all of them that way. But I didn't send tapes back and forth in the mail to different people. Did you guys used to do that?
I didn't tape trade, but I used to, when they, you know, back in the, you know, I keep saying back in the day, but, you know, there used to be a thing, and a lot of people don't know about it, but there used to be a thing called Video Source. So you go out there and you rent, I used to rent all the Coliseum video stuff back in the day. So that's how I would keep up with everything that was going on, the WWF stuff at least. Then as I got older and got cable, then I was watching more, you know, Nitro, and then I discovered ECW one day. So I was watching all that stuff. NWA.
That must have been cool, huh?
It actually was, yeah. It really was.
Yeah, because I was working for, you know, for Vince back at the time.
Yeah.
Already, but, you know, when I put that show together with Dennis Caruso, may he rest in peace, right before I went to work for Vince as 123 Kid, I worked with Sabu, first time ever. And Terry Funk worked with Hawk, Road Warrior Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And Masa Saito was on the card. Taz, Chris Candido, Jerry Lynn, a ton of guys that were ended up being like original ECW guys. And I remember talking with Sabu, you know, because we were tight, man. And, you know, we were discussing the concept of like adult pro wrestling, like, because we were fed up with the cartoon bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to present like something for that people could watch and not be like, not just tolerate it so they could see a good match, you know? Because I think pro wrestling fans tolerate a lot, other people would just quit watching if they dislike something this bad.
That's perfect. Because I'm going to ask you this question: do you think that the PG rating that the WWE has right now is hurting them?
No, I don't. I really don't, because I think they're pushing the envelope plenty right now when it comes to that. Just fine. Like, I mean, you know, looking back at some of the things we did back then, like, okay, yeah, that was like, it was pretty heavy, man, looking back, a lot of it. Like, and I'm not sure if that was, I don't know, you tell me, we were the ones doing it. Like, was it the heavy stuff that made you like it more, or was it just the cool personas?
I think what it was it was great to have an alternative to WCW. I think when WCW didn't have a lot of the kick and the NWO was starting to get boring, I could turn on Monday Night Raw and I could watch DX go to Norfolk, Virginia and ride up to Nitro.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It was a lot more innovation. It was when I was watching Raw, it was basically I was watching Jerry Springer's show with wrestlers. That's pretty much what.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. 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 I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good analogy. I could see where you would say that. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't tape trade back in the day, Sean, because when I was younger, I had AWA, I had UWF, I had wrestling out of Windsor, Canada, international wrestling with Dino Bravo and Abdullah the Butcher. I had
Wow.
Dick the Bruce. I had NWA. I had the whole gamut back in the day. World Class. I didn't need a tape.
I'd have been in heaven, dude.
Yeah.
We had one wrestling block in the morning that, you know, it wasn't, it disappeared after a while. They had like 3 hours at like, world, there was like World Class and WWE, WWF back then, Superstar Show. But,
yes.
Oh man, I knew about all that from the magazines, but I would have been like just in heaven to be able to see any of that.
Dude,
I wanted to watch wrestling. If it was the shittiest wrestling in the world, I wanted to watch it.
You know what? I'm gonna tell you right now. When I'm bored around the house and I got nothing to do, I'm popping on the WWE Network and I'm watching, you know, Nitro from back in the day. Or if I'm not doing it, I'm on YouTube watching all the classic stuff like the Midnight Express versus Rock and Roll Express and
yeah,
watching Six versus Chris Jericho and telling Jericho, you know, the only thing you didn't beat nothing.
Oh, you're beating his meat.
Yeah, exactly.
I got in trouble for that.
Yeah.
I got in trouble for a clever innuendo.
Yeah, me, she was like, you can't say that. You said, what did I say? That's the shit that I grew up on. That's the stuff that I admit. And, but I just, you know what? Honestly, man, I watch whatever I can. I got over like 300 wrestling tapes. So I pretty
wow,
much.
Wow, really?
Yes. Yes.
You still have them on VHS? You haven't converted them?
I haven't converted them. Still got them on VHS. Got them like locked up because I'm going to tell you what I did. I went when WCW went out of business and a lot of these video stores still had that stuff and they didn't know what the hell they had. So I would just go on there and be like, hey, listen, can I buy this tape? Oh, yeah, take it, $5. I'm like, you stupid bastard. I just got Starrcade 96 for $5. So, yeah, man. Even though right now it's not really that exciting and a lot of people think it's for kids, I'm still a fan. That's why I do this podcast. I'm a fan, you know. I come on
right.
Come on here and
shoot. Sure.
You know, I'm a fan.
And, you know, and here's the thing, too, man. On the flip side of things, when you invest 3 hours of your life that you'll never get back in something, it does give you the right, even though it's free, you know, you're not paying a ticket. I mean, our time is our time. And to me, that's the most valuable commodity. I say this a lot. Time is the most valuable commodity there is because it's something you can't save and you can never get back, you know. You can't put it, like Jim Croce said, you can't save time in a bottle.
Yeah, I can't. You know.
And so, you know, you don't want to give that time up every week, man. If it's like you're just like, going, oh man, it's like I said, tolerating things.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm like you. I can't sit through 3 hours of Monday Night Raw. I just can't do it. It's just I watch the show for certain pieces. If I see the people I want to see, if I last night, phenomenal match between Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. The week before, we had a phenomenal match between Triple H and Dolph Ziggler. So I'm cool with that, you know. And but it's just not the same. It's like, you know, like I watch on Monday nights. Listen, Monday nights come, and if I'm home at 5 o'clock, and I'm on West Coast, I'm in California. So back in the day when I was,
where are you, northern or southern?
I'm in southern. I'm in a town called Rosamond. It's like right here by the Mojave Desert. So I'm out that way.
What about you?
I'm in Michigan.
Oh yeah, where?
I'm just south of Detroit.
Ah, wow.
Yeah.
Damn. So that's how you got all that stuff.
Yeah, we had Channel 9 out of Canada. We had ESPN. We had a couple UHF stations that would show, like, Mid-South with, you know, Jim Ross and the Freebirds and Terry Taylor and Hacksaw Jim Dunn. All those guys, man. I mean, that's when it was really, really rocking. I mean, that was like 8 o'clock on a Friday night. You had to watch it. It was like really before VHS tapes. You had to make sure Friday
night
you
actually had
that, man.
If,
yeah.
Right, man, hey, if something's worked, you going, I can't do that because I have to go home and watch such and such. That means something's worth watching.
I mean, that was 1 hour. It was solid. It was good wrestling. It was good storytelling. Yeah. Jim Ross was the only commentator they had. Hey. The Freebirds are over. I mean, it was good stuff.
Yeah. Right? And like you guys, like we were saying, you know, the three hours. Trust me, they all know. They all understand it like that. It's really hard for everybody to sit through 3 hours. They all get it. They're kind of stuck with it for now, you know? It's not just like they can go and go, by the way, you know, we're just going to go ahead and, like, you know, just select it too. Because they signed a deal, you know? So, yeah.
I mean, I get why.
Yeah. I don't know.
I get why.
I would try to figure out a different way to present it. Maybe present one of the hours in a different way.
You know, Sean, back in the day, though, I mean, I know why WWE does it. It's because it's financially, it's all money. I mean, at the end of the day, WWE is a business. They want to make money. Same thing with WCW made that mistake when you guys were really beating their ass in the ratings. WCW made that mistake of going 3 hours, and I couldn't sit through 3 hours of Nitro.
Oh, no, and then there was, and the whole just going to Thunder was just the thought of having two shows we thought was, like, pushing it, you know?
Yeah, but 6:05, man, 6:05 on Saturdays, I was watching WCW Saturday night, and I would stay up till, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning and watch WCW Worldwide and WCW Main Event at 6 o'clock in the morning on the weekends, and when I was a kid, I was watching Wrestling Challenge and WWF Superstars at 11 o'clock on Fox 11 out here. So, I mean, I've seen you perform lots of times when you guys would come out here and you guys would hit up Anaheim, hit up the Arrowhead Pine.
6:05 in my day was the Crockett era.
Well, good for you, Steve. But 6:05 in my day was the NWO era.
Yeah, but your central time, man.
To the Four Horsemen. I mean, yeah, Rock and Roll Midnight Express. That stuff. That's what I grew up watching, 6:05.
No,
and then, of course,
six o'clock, I think, was wrestling on TBS on Saturdays.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure it was six. And then right after it, and it was funny because Gordon Soley would be the host of it. And then right after it, I'd switch over to Channel 44, WTOG. And Championship Wrestling from Florida would be on, and there would be Gordon again, you know? And so that was the 2 hours a week that we had until WWF got in the market with the syndicated show.
Well, the only thing I can say in my lifetime that I've ever experienced something like that was when Rick Rude appeared on Nitro and Raw on the same night. That was crazy.
What are you going to do?
That was pretty, you know? It was kind of weird for me, though. I was watching it, man. It was kind of weird because on Raw, the dude had a beard. On Nitro, he had a mustache. I'm like, what the hell? Because, like, again, I wasn't smart to anything, but it was like, I don't know. It was just crazy, man. But I, you know, really enjoyed your work as the 123 kid. Really likes your stuff.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, was a big.
That was, looking back at it, it was not like, I appreciate it more looking back. I'm going, wow, I did some, you know, some, and that Lightning Kid and stuff. And when I was in Japan, for a guy that's afraid of height and that, I did a lot of pretty crazy things, you know, and I had to. You do things, man. Yeah, it's scary. You know, like some people go, oh, man, that's no fear of that. The hell I didn't. I was scared to death, man, but it was more important to me to you know, get that reaction.
Right.
You know, and that. So, you know, I was very, very fortunate. I did my part, but a lot of people do their part and they're not in the right place at the right time. You know, they don't have the proper vision. They don't learn every single thing there is that they can learn about this, you know, about wrestling. And, you know, they wonder why they never made it or whatever. So.
Well, you're looking back on your career, man, you definitely made it. You definitely were in the trenches of a lot of stuff. I mean, you were smack dab in the middle of that war. I mean, you were at a time when the wrestling business was on fire. You were in the middle of that shit, whether it be WWF or WCW. Exactly. And just, I mean, you know, it's funny because this year, July 7th, will be 20 years since the NWO was formed in July
1976.
And I was saying the other day, I was like, that is crazy. That is 2016, and I'm still talking about the NWO. That shows you. I can tell you about.
Shirts are still everywhere.
You're damn right there. I got three of them, dude. I'm like this. When you take into perspective, I can tell you what happened back in the day. But I can't tell you what happened on Raw 2 weeks ago.
I know, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's different for me because I actually, like, I did a lot of the things. So, like, it's easy for me to remember,
mm-hmm.
like, things that happened, you know, and that. But I still, like, I go back and I'm like, oh, I forgot I had that match. Or, you know, and some good ones, man. I came across one of Slayer from a Nitro in Pensacola.
Yep.
And Kurt Hennig came in and made the saves because we all ended up beating the crap out of him.
You know, I remember when you had Flair, you were doing that feud, and you told Flair. Flair says he don't know about Hall, he don't know about Nash, but I know damn well I can kick your ass. Is what he told you.
Yeah, and he's had more world titles than I've had pieces of ass.
yeah.
He told me. Yeah, we were just talking about that last night, Rick and I.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that.
Yeah, that was funny.
Because we were talking about Kevin Green going into the NFL Hall of Fame, and then, you know, so it kind of brought up the memory of our 6-man tag that we all had. That was one of my favorite matches ever.
Yeah, that was at Slamboree. And you know what? As a matter of fact, it's funny because I was watching that match the other day, the 6-man tag, and it's like when you guys were coming down and nobody had a better entrance than, you know, you and Hall and Nash, when you guys were the Wolfpack. And a lot of people don't know that the Wolfpack, way before the Wolfpack became a thing in WCW, the Wolfpack was all Nash and Six. And a lot of people
we were the Wolfpack in WCW, and then I left, and then they turned it into some red and black thing.
Yeah, that's, I know, I wasn't a fan of that. I thought.
Yeah, no, we were the Wolfpack, like, the three of us.
Yep, I know. Yeah. You guys were coming down the aisle, and you
were...
Yeah,
we still are.
You were coming down the aisle, and I remember you. It was some fan was talking shit. You told this fan to suck it, and that was the early show, because you guys have been doing the crotch chop for years already. So, but that right there, I was like, you know, that was the early part right there, the early origins of X-Pac right there. Just telling this dude to suck it. So I was like,
yeah, coming down the aisle on the way to the ring at the Slamboree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was really telling him too.
Yeah, that was a shit, man. I mean, you guys get the people riled up. The only regret I have, and I bitch about this all the time, is that I cannot get one of those original NWO shirts from back in the day from WCW.
I can't imagine how anybody could.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, they just sold just millions and millions of those.
Yeah, I had one, but I lost it over time. It's like I have the WWE one that came out with in 2002. I got the one they come out with now, but it's like it's not the same. The logo is like too small, and it really blows. But eventually, I'm gonna get one. I'm gonna find a way to get one.
Yeah, I used to have a box. I got rid of them all.
Yeah, but
they used to send boxes of them to us. WCW.
I bought the I did buy the Pro Wrestling Tees shirt that you guys had out there. I bought one of those. I bought I have the you have one where it was the 2-3 sign, but it's red. So I have that.
Yeah.
I got that one, and then I got the Kevin Nash Click T-shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees.
I don't think very many people have the one with the DX on one side and the NWO on the other.
No, I don't think I've never seen that. No, I've never seen it.
Oh yeah, it's on my the graphic is on the back on my Twitter profile.
Have to check
it
out.
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
I tell you, it's funny you mentioned that because when I went to Raw a couple years ago, all of us, we went with a bunch of people with my family, whatever. We all went, and the majority of us were wearing NWO shirt, but my sister had on a DX shirt. Like, completely outnumbered, dude. Like, six of us wearing black and white, and she's got on this DX. And I'm like, you know, DX was the you know, if it was my opinion, I know you guys were all cool, but my opinion, if it had not been for NWO, there would never have been a DX.
That's right.
That's how
true.
That's how I look at that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, if that's what have allowed us to do what we wanted, we would have done the five of us. We would have had like something like that. I mean, everything worked out how it was supposed to.
True. And I think
it all see the NWO and DX all come from the Click. That's the fact of the matter.
Absolutely.
It was all born from the Click.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the whole point. But I think, to me, NWO, you know, is ingrained in society. But you guys, what you guys did with DX and the WWF, especially around 98 and into 99, you guys surpassed the NWO.
You might find some disagreement with that from Scott and Kevin, but I'll agree with you on that.
I
was there for both of them.
Yeah, in the peak
of both of them.
Yeah, you were. And I just, looking back on it as a fan, I'm like, you know, DX was a little bit cooler than NWO, because NWO got watered down. It was just too many people in the group. Yep. It's just, if it had just remained the main core of people, it would have been fine. But when you're adding in a lot of people, no disrespect to a lot of those wrestlers, but everybody did not need to be a part of NWO. I get why they did it, because they wanted to have people to wrestle in the WCW. But when you started doing that, man, and then you went in with the Wolfpack and all this dumb shit, I'm looking at the WWE. Okay, you got DX going up against the Nation. You got, you know, DX against the Corporation. And then the Corporation was going on to be the corporate ministry and all that type of stuff. And I'm still looking over at WCW. I'm looking at WCW and like, okay, all you got now, you got the Wolfpack. You got all this Wolfpack Elite NWO. And then a year later, they do NWO Silver and Black. And it's like WCW still kept the same concept. They never could get past NWO. Like, what else do you got besides NWO? But WWE kind of has that problem right now, because I look at the Authority and I'm like, it's just another version of the Corporation, just for now.
Yeah.
They had nothing, Frank. That's why they're out of business.
well, you know, Steve, how I feel about WCW. Yeah.
That's like when I can remember that stuff. So.
Yeah.
I enjoyed my time there for the most part. I really did. I just couldn't handle how hard they were. They had me on the road just way too much at the end there, and it's going to kill me. I ended up with a broken neck, you know, so.
Sorry, because you guys are working house shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But,
you
know, it was great. I'm grateful. I'm doing well now. Our business is good. You know, my dark days and the perspective, like, you know, doing, you know, the self-harm days are behind me. And, you know, I'm back in the graces of the WWE, even though I still wonder why after some of the shit I say on Twitter. But, and I'm just, I've been blessed, and my life has been and amazing. You know, a lot of people go and they think about all the negative things as far as just the bad things that have happened to me, or bad things that I've done to myself, or just my failures or whatever. But, like, man, all the positive stuff just completely blows all that shit out of the water. It's incredible. My life's been incredible. I mean, it still is. It's amazing. I'm very blessed, and I'm very grateful for it. I really, really am. And it's because of wrestling. It's
so are you going to write wrestling. A book?
Not anytime soon, I don't think. I mean, everybody has been asking me for years about that, but I just don't think so anytime soon, because I'm not going to have a ghostwriter write my book, because that's not me, right? You know, I feel like I almost have to write the whole thing. I have to sit down and type it myself, even. That's the kind of writer. I actually am a good writer. I mean, you might, like, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't really continue school for very long when I was a kid, but, like, there's some punctuation errors in that, in my writings, and some run-on sentences, and I tend to ramble, but, like, you get a good idea of what happened, you know, in my experience when you read my writings. And you can tell they're my writings. So if somebody else wrote my book, it wouldn't sound like me. Maybe other people wouldn't get it, but I would, and that matters a great deal to me, being that it's supposed to be my book.
I know you're very active on Twitter. Why don't you plug your Twitter and your other social media? Do you have any other social media? Are you on Facebook, official website?
No, man, like I don't. No, no. Just I mean, Twitter. I have, like, a Vine and that, but the only thing on my Vine is the little video of my dog humping my cat. I don't know if you saw it, but it's pretty funny. My female dog humping the male cat.
Is that 5 stars?
Big Show came up to me last night and he goes, "You know, it's a domination thing. She's not confused, right?" And he was laughing. I'm like, "I know. I was just like joking." But anyways, at the real X Pac on Twitter is all I really mess with right now. I might get into Instagram or that at some point, but you know, I get in enough trouble, not trouble with others, but trouble with myself on Twitter as it is. I don't need to be like spreading it into other forms of social media, man. And it's not other people like usually that complain to me about my Twitter, about my tweets. It's me going back and reading them and going, "Holy shit, what the hell was I thinking there?" Or, you know, like as far as I know what I was thinking, but what was I thinking when I decided to share that thought with the world? You know, so.
Yeah, that's the thing with social media. You can't take it back. Once it's out there, it's out there. So.
Yeah.
And I know you're always critical of your typos and things, so that's always...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess I do. I guess I might have a little OCD in me, but not much. But I'm funny about that. It really bothers me. Because even though I didn't really go to school, I kind of try to pride myself in the fact that I was good at spelling and English and things like that. So when I come do, when I do these, I do them just because I did this because I you guys have been around for a long time. I'm all over the place. I don't even really, you know, obviously I'll be in Mania Week in Dallas, but and I already have access, but man, I'm such a scatterbrained guy. I mean, the shots to the head, that's not a joke, man. That really affects. There's some serious effects that I feel from that. You know, it's, you know, when I'm telling you guys, pull me back, you know, I'm out in the weeds, that's not because of the weeds. That's because of getting banged in the head with chairs and stupid shit like that, you know, for, you know, 20 years.
Right.
Thinking it was cool. Your head's at the hardest part of your body. Well, it is, but, you know, the brain isn't. The brain that's right behind it is not. And so I guess we're figuring that out now.
Right.
So,
well, Sean, we definitely appreciate your time. We've really enjoyed talking to you today. And I know people can follow you.
Fellas.